We're just going live. We're just going with it.
No music.
No music. We'll do music in a second, but I'm having fun just riffing, talking about did they ever give Ramsay's son a name?
I don't think so. Probably in history. But for the purposes of this movie, no, he's one of those, like, he's one of those characters who exist to die, you know,
one
to
of those
prove
dead
a point.
Kids, just dead kids. I would imagine, I think it's like Ramsay's the second, like Ramsay two.
Probably. We should have a list, some sort of BuzzFeed list type thing where it's like classic dead kids in cinema. This kid would be up there.
He's up there. Oh my God. Hell of a way to start. That's how you start a fucking podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Uncultured Universe. We are the podcast where two friends show each other movies, shows, and anything else in between that they need to see, hear, or experience in order to get a little more cultured. I'm your host, Joe, and I'm joined as always by the uncultured Justin. Today, we will simply, in fact, be playing with the big boys. It's 1998's The Prince of Egypt.
Oh, wow. This is from 1998?
This is from 1998. Did you think it was like sooner or further back?
I thought it was sooner. I thought this was like in the 2000s and the early aughts.
Yeah, because it looks amazing.
It's so crisp. It's so crisp.
Can I just say, I like that in these latter days of our podcast, we're just constantly introducing new format changes, seemingly at random. I love a cold open. Why haven't we been doing a cold open every single time?
Funnily enough, we're calling back to like our first like two episodes we did where we did a cold open. We started with cold opens.
I think those whole episodes were cold open. Did we have any like musical effects on those episodes?
It took a few episodes to get to our musical opening. So yeah, so we're hearkening back to our early days. We've done the full transition of like infant to, and you know, when you kind of revert back, you know, back to diapers kind of a thing. We're doing what we've done at the beginning.
Is that what infants do? Like go back to type. Oh, you
as
mean
you
like
older,
old people.
Old
yeah.
people. Yeah.
Yeah.
They need I
got you.
Yeah. I'm with you. What a hell of a transition to talk about this movie.
Hell of a transition. We're talking about life and death. So naturally we are talking about The Prince of Egypt. Justin, this is one I have been excited about
Clamoring.
For a while.
Clamor.
And we decided to end our podcast, and so I had to get this one in like Indiana Jones with his hat just right under the door yeah. before our final big explosion of an episode.
Our final climax. Yeah.
I'm gonna use all of this time to talk about just like Joe's religious film and television upbringing, have a little yeah. corner for that, and just squeeze all of that into this one episode around The Prince of Egypt. But what'd you think? Oh, buddy, your volume is completely cut off right now.
Is it? Oh, that's
there
better.
You go. There you go. You're back.
I was admittedly apprehensive. It's like Joe's taking us to church.
Give me some more of that.
Joe's taking us to church, y'all. We're going Old Testament. We're this like the last few movies of Joe's have been Sister Act, Sister
Joe,
Act 2.
Joe was homeschooled. This is getting weird.
This is getting real weird.
Where are we going with this?
Where are we going with this? I grew up going to the church.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up watching The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston and the gang. I'm familiar with the works of the word kind of a thing, but, I'm familiar with the tales and the myths and legends. Admittedly it is not my bag.
Right.
And you know, it's, I was, you know, full transparency, I was a little uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
This is not my thing. But this movie was enjoyable.
Uh-huh.
Purely from a condensed storytelling piece. Obviously, there's, you know, as the story goes from this perspective of Moses and all that, like, there's so much to it. There's heaps to it. So it's interesting that they took this one slice from it.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of teased some of the other stuff towards the end that he's probably more better known for, or depending on who you look at or who you're asking. But from the storytelling point of view, but also from the visuals, I super dug this movie just in the way that it looked. The cinematography in some of these shots are orgasmic.
We're going to get into how this camera fucking moves in this yeah. movie. You know me. I usually have like one Big Joe theory about any big Joe thought about any movie, and I save it for the end. But I think we should touch on it now.
Yeah.
Let me tell you my theories here. So I too was a little apprehensive revisiting this, because like I think that when you talk about like religious movies, particularly like Christian movies, almost in the same way you think about like Christian rock or something like that.
Yeah.
There's I think especially in this day and age for folks like us, there may be a bit of like a cringe factor in that, if that makes sense. And so I definitely grew up with movies and TV shows and musics like that, not to a crazy extent, but was in the radius of that. So we watched like VeggieTales, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Are you familiar? Mm-hmm. And my big theory going into The Prince of Egypt and movies like it that I could mention is like, first of all, it's kind of weird that it is this very religious movie coming from like kind of a blockbustery studio like DreamWorks, even though they were still getting a handle on like their animation studio. And so I was like, okay, thinking through that. And then I landed on like, there's religious movies and then there's movies about religion. And I think this for me is maybe the latter.
Yeah.
Whereas like, this isn't a movie where it's like everyday life and they kind of sprinkle in overtly like religious or specifically like Christian themes, which can seem kind of clunky and kind of like lower quality.
Yeah.
This is a movie about a moment in religious history, but I think it's approaching it from a place that isn't necessarily like, oh, the creators are trying to convert me to the Hebrew religion, you know?
Right. Yeah. and I kind of appreciated that a little bit of like, it's just like, I don't know. We'll kind of also go into like my overall thesis and kind of overall thoughts right off the bat of like, this is kind of like,
there's no rules.
There's no fucking rules. This is kind of like the MCU-ification of what they were trying, even though this is, you know, years prior.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of the vibe that I got from it.
Tell me more. Explain yourself.
This is like Moses's origin story, you
know? Uh-huh.
And it's the rise of Moses kind of a thing. And you know, they're teasing and they're showing like little highlights of like the origin of Passover.
Yeah.
And, you know, like fun, like callbacks to, you know, previous stuff from the, you know, different books in the Bible or whatever. And then also like towards the end, like once he parts the Red Sea and they get to where they need to go, and he comes down off the mountain and he has the two tablets for the Ten Commandments in it. But they don't even gloss over that because like it's the end of the story. It's like that's later. That would come up in Prince of Egypt too. Two Prince to Egypt, or
just,
you know, like it and it would tease and it would be like, you know, Ramses will return, or you know, Moses will return, and it would, you know, do other stories.
We truly are saving our best for last on this podcast. I'm obsessed with that take. Yeah. I think you're onto something there where, like, the same, like, whatever the fuck screenwriting instinct is present here that would eventually evolve into, oh, we're going to tease Hulk at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
I think you've got it exactly right. It's like, this movie is structured in the same way as a Marvel movie where you take this character, you put him into these scenarios that completely upend expectations, and you give him like his beginning villain to defeat while also like establishing his weird little superpower origins.
Yeah.
That he could then grow, like in the second Prince of Egypt, he'd have to like lose access to God. That would be it's a classic Spider-Man 2 scenario.
Which I'm sure happens maybe at some point. Doesn't he have to like, oh, wait, I don't know. I'm conflating my.
Do you want to talk about it? Cause like, I kind of know how much do you know? We're going to back it all the way. We're backing it all the way up. Let's start at the beginning here. How much do you know about like the Bible and particularly this part of it as a concept?
Like, so specifically the book of Exodus?
Yeah.
Not too much outside of like, if I really like kind of stretch my brain thinking about the movie, The Ten Commandments.
Right. So I'll tell you, I was raised Catholic, which you may think is like super religious and you'd be right, but we're not necessarily like studying and quoting the Bible as much as people would think. So I probably have never like read through the entire book of Exodus here. Mm-hmm. But I do know what happens after this movie is done, and it's insane. Do you want me to tell you?
Tell me.
Yeah. So they get through the parting of the sea. I think it's the Red Sea.
The Red Sea. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those. And they end up in this like new land. It's not the Promised Land yet. And
oh, it's not Israel. They haven't made it to Israel.
Not yet. It's like however many hundreds of thousands of them. And so they're kind of just like camping out, like we see at the very end. Like they're getting used to being slaves.
They're excited. Yeah.
And Moses goes up that big mountain that we see, comes back down.
Mount Doom. Yep.
Yeah. Eventually with the Ten Commandments, after conversing with God, he's like, okay, here's our new charter for this land that we will establish. The problem is he takes too long. And like, when it comes to the Bible and when it comes to this movie, we'll talk about it. Like, time is a very fickle thing because we don't know if this movie is over the course of like 20 years or 6 weeks, honestly. So like, him taking too long could mean like he was up on that mountain for like a year, you know?
Right.
And so he takes too long, and the people down below start to like get distracted, and they start to think like, we still want to like honor God in a way, but maybe there are better ways to do it. And what they land on, and I'm paraphrasing so hard here, they start worshiping a golden calf statue.
Oh, shit.
Which is not great. And so
that's like one of the rules, right? Like, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like his sister and brother, like Miriam and Aaron, are like in on it, I believe. Please, no. Please no one correct me if I'm completely wrong about this.
Betrayal from Sandra Bullock and Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, and they think they're like doing the right thing, but then Moses gets like really mad and God gets really mad, and like he's like, because you guys did this, like no, you're not going to be able to go to the Promised Land to everyone. And so they have to walk around the desert for 40 years because of that. And like a lot of them like don't get to go to the Promised Land. Like, I don't think Moses goes to the Promised Land. I don't think like Miriam and them go to the Promised Land. It's like for their kids now. And so they are like banished after they get out of slavery and do all of this stuff. They do this one thing wrong, and it's like, well, now you're going to be a lesson in the religious textbook. And you can't be like, I guess they're free like in the desert, but they don't get to come to the Promised Land because of that.
Classic Old Testament God, just always moving the goalpost, you know?
So, So if they, yeah, if they did establish like a Prince of Egypt too, it would be insane.
They would have to like Empire Strikes Back, you know, like it's like the stakes are higher, the lows are lower.
Yeah.
Luke, I am your father. Yeah. God, you know, that kind of stuff. Crazy.
So that's what, like, literally what's happening in the final scene of this movie when he's like holding the Ten Commandments and looks out over the crowd. Like, that's what it is.
Down below, they're like, they're worshiping Mubi.
They're like dancing around and doing fire and stuff. Yeah. They're worshiping Mubi. Yeah. You know what they, Dreamworks did instead? So
they made Shrek.
They pivoted away from, well, first of all, yes, they did make Shrek at the same time as this. But they saw the success of Prince of Egypt and followed up with a direct-to-video Joseph King of Dreams movie, which is like, you know, like, have you ever heard of like Joseph and like the multi-colored dream coat like on Broadway? It's that whole thing where like it's another biblical story. I think it takes place after it might be before. It's maybe someone related to Moses, but it's like it's a similar animation style, but like slightly crappier because it's direct to video and they maybe rushed it out. And it's about like this guy who has a bunch of brothers and his dad loves him most, and so his brothers decide to like sell him into slavery, I'm pretty sure.
Classic.
And so it's like similar theme, similar location. Ben Affleck is Joseph, I think.
Oh no.
yeah, yeah.
The casting director or whoever for these movies apparently is turning out is just like, they obviously, it's 1999. They no one's learned their lesson yet of like, hey, this story about definitely brown people, maybe we shouldn't cast an, like, have an all white cast.
Oh yeah. Like, fully hear you. Have we ever covered a movie that has a more stacked cast than this
but
movie?
But this movie is fucking stacked.
I'll cover it real quick, but like I'll cover it in my stats too. This movie stars Val Kilmer, Ralph Fiennes, Michelle Pfeiffer, Sandra Bullock, Jeff Goldblum, Danny Glover, Patrick Stewart, Helen Mirren, Steve Martin, and Martin Short. Like,
insane.
What was going on in that recording booth?
The Steve Martin and Martin Short as essentially the who are the two goons from Hercules?
Oh, the Pain and Panic.
Pain and Panic.
Yes. Yeah. There's always just like a tall one and a short one.
The tall, skinny, and a short and fat.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as that came on, Ryan was like, is that Steve Martin? And that's when we had to stop and look at the cast list. And she's like, holy shit.
Just look at this inescapable voice. Like, Martin Short sounds weird in this, but it's like definitely Steve Martin.
Yeah. It's crazy, the casting. Val Kilmer, Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Does a great job.
This is kind of post-Batman?
When was Batman,
he's not Batman and Robin. He's Batman Forever.
Batman Forever was 1997.
Okay.
So this is, he probably picked up this script immediately as soon as he was done filming Batman, probably.
Right. It may have been concurrent, though, too, because I think it took them forever to make this movie. And from what I remember reading, it's like people were working on Shrek and they would get kicked out of Shrek to go work on Prince of Egypt down in the basement. That may be opposite, but like there was some sort of relationship there where like Shrek and Prince of Egypt were being worked in the same
building
at the
same time.
That's insane.
Can you imagine the alternate universe where Shrek doesn't do as well, but Prince of Egypt does?
Yeah.
And now there's a Prince of Egypt land at Universal Studios.
There's Prince of Egypt 4D, but like it's still Farquaad's ghost for some reason.
Yeah, it's the same ride, but like you're riding through the desert on the.
They're like,
on the
why
chair.
Is there a stone dragon in this?
Yeah, it's crazy. Could you imagine?
Gingerbread and Prince of Egypt.
Yeah. Do you know the Son of God?
So all right. Well, we'll get into it. Let's kind of talk through what was your knowledge of this movie before watching it?
I conflated it a little bit in my brain of like, I know this isn't El Dorado, but like the road to El Dorado, but like, is it? Maybe not. Like that same kind of time frame of animation, even though that was Disney, right?
No, Disney. That was DreamWorks. So you're absolutely correct. That El Dorado was like one of the follow-ups to Prince of Egypt in terms of like 2D animation.
Well, but like way different style, way different look.
Yeah, yeah. Still kind of like there's kind of a grossness to El Dorado that's like very DreamWorks and not Disney. Mm-hmm. We definitely grew up on the road to El Dorado too. That movie rocks so much.
So like I was picturing that in my head, but I remembered the logo, like the Prince of Egypt, and kind of like sort of the styling of the human characters.
Right.
You know, it's kind of Tim Burton-esque, you know, like the elongated faces.
I'm glad they went for like a very distinctive art style here, and everything's not just like Pixar People Have Made of Clouds type stuff.
Yeah, that would be a really uncomfortable movie. This, even though it's like it's hyper realistic or whatever, it kind of lends itself to more of the grounded, gritty realism that they're kind of trying to portray.
Yeah.
Because if you try to do the smiting of the firstborn scene with like bubbly characters, like it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It's just like the movie Soul. They just have like little bubble souls just like going up into the heavens. Just... Bloop. Tina Fey is there. let me give you some stats and then we can kind of break this movie apart and talk through it. Because there's like definitely some favorite parts I want to talk about.
There's some stuff.
We're talking about Prince of Egypt. It's directed by Brenda Chapman, Steve Hickner, and Simon Wells, starring the aforementioned stacked cast of mostly white people, apart from Danny Glover. It was released in December of 1998. It made $218 million against a budget of, I'm going to say, $100 million. The internet gave me a range, but I'm going to say it's on the high range of that just because it looks pretty good.
Yeah, why not?
Was nominated for 2 Oscars, famously won Best Original Song for When You Believe.
Which one was that one? Was that? Oh, that was the
that's the ending song where Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston have a duet version of it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you get those two in there.
Oh my God, Justin, have you not heard? Oh, you. Okay. Well, we're gonna listen to that after this. So this movie, I like that it starts right off the bat saying like this is an adaptation of the Book of Exodus, which is really cool for like a child's animated movie. Mm-hmm. And then also saying like this isn't really a direct adaptation of the Bible, because if they did that, I think it would be like even darker still. And also like I don't think there's this level of like emotion, humor obviously in the Bible, but like a lot of the character relationships are new to this movie, I would say. But I like that they say like they think they've captured like the kind of the emotional truth of the story as part of this, even though like liberties have been taken, which I think is an interesting way to begin, where it's like we're obviously producing this child's animated movie of this kind of dark story about slavery and death. But there's these like powerful themes throughout that we are also incorporating into our movie. And that's where the adaptation comes in, not necessarily in like the scene by scene screenplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The dynamic, you know, going back to the MCU-ness of it, you know, this movie is kind of like the first Thor.
Mm-hmm.
You have the brother dynamic between Thor and Loki, you know, is Moses and Ramses. One's adopted, one doesn't belong, one of these things is not like the other, one is ascended to the throne, the other one is not. But that's kind of where the similarities dissipate. Although like his main first, you know, nemesis he needs to defeat is his own brother, you know, kind of a thing.
I see it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally there.
I mean, keeping that like MCU thought going, it's not necessarily MCU, but like I was thinking through like, oh God, now I want to see like a full on Marvel animated movie too. And then I realized like the Spider-Verse movies are out there right now, which is interesting to think about in terms of like the mixture of animation styles that those movies have been like so successful with, because again, after 2 decades of like very entertaining and endearing Pixar DreamWorks slop that looks like pavement on people's faces, you know, like that's what made this those Spider-Verse movies pop so much, is because like it was a bit of a return to dynamic two-dimensional animation, obviously with 3D elements involved as well, which is it's interesting to think of this movie as like the start of that arc goes to the Spider-Verse movies, because this is obviously using very notable 3D new animation techniques in certain areas to enhance the 2D elements.
Right.
And so you get a lot of stuff with like water and like weather disaster plague events that are like three dimensional techniques within this 2D space that I think aren't as clunky as you think they would be for 1998.
For 1998, 1999, the visuals and the crispness of some of those larger scale things. First, you know, I'm picking up on like as soon as the title credits start to happen, and it's like that wispy kind of air sort of thing, and I was like, oh, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
And then like smash cut to get the story going, but it's setting up of like, oh, there's like some gritty realness to this, and you know, it's definitely apparent in, you know, all the sand scenes. It's so cool looking. It looks so, so impressive.
It's telling this like, not like fairy tale, but like this ancient fable, but it definitely doesn't open with like the book opening up and like narration. Like it drops you into straight up Egyptian slavery quite off the bat.
Yeah.
And so you have this like intense and visceral opening song, and this is where I start to think, like watching it, like formulating my other theorem about this movie, is like almost every scene in this movie does more than it has to like get the message across. Like you'd get kind of like lower quality movies, animated movies these days, that are just like, oh, the camera's staying in place and we're passing it back and forth between people. The way that the camera moves and like emotions are portrayed, cinematography is portrayed, like the mise-en-scene of it all, you know, like where things are placed within the scene is insane in some of the shots of this movie.
The one I'm taking away that as soon as I saw it, I was like, I see what they're about to do, and it's really cool. And I think they mirror it in a couple different scenes, but there's one where it's Pharaoh, I think. I don't remember his name, but Ramsay's dad,
the older Seti,
the older one. They're like in his throne room or whatever, and they kind of throw back to like the pyramid or the sphinx behind him with the head, and like the way that like his head is kind of like aligned with it, like the noses are gonna align. Super cool.
Fucking cool.
And then they do it again when Ramses is Pharaoh.
Yeah.
And you can see like his is much larger than his dad's, but it's still the same shot where they're like kind of like angled the same. So well planned out and executed. There's so many great shots like that. I want to know who the photographer or the cinematographer is.
Yeah, like it, and it's always been a question about like cinematography in animated movies and how much you can actually credit cinematographers when like the camera isn't real, you know. But like I think this movies like this like really present an argument for cinematography and animated movies, because like, sure, that you could put the camera in places that are technically impossible, but it's still a choice where you're putting the camera. And so you have scenes like the one you're talking about in that throne room, where like you'll get like this interplay between these characters. And then what always strikes me is the way like it zooms out and shows this like incredibly wide shot where the characters are almost silhouetted. And then you see like all of Egypt just in the background of them, including like the Sphinx, including the pyramids and all that stuff. It does that like a couple times and it's just like stunning.
Yeah. The wide shot, the use of the wide shot is masterful. And it feels, you know, in for a lack of better word, it just feels biblical. Because it just feels humongous.
It feels biblical. They're playing off of like you're saying, stuff like the Ten Commandments, where everything used to be like an epic in the 50s, you know, all these biblical epics. And they have to kind of show you how big and grand Egypt is while keeping you ostensibly like in this one city that doesn't seem to be like super huge in any way. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if the city's named in this movie. Like, they just talk about like Egypt as a whole and not necessarily like Cairo, I don't know what the what the city would actually be called in this case.
I don't know. Another shot that like expertly got across the point of scale and grandiose is the parting of the Red Sea at the end. Like, I knew that was going to happen.
I mean, yeah.
And, you know, like, it's going to, like, whatever. It's going to look like how I think it's going to look. But it takes it to, like, 10x the level. And either it's the camera shot or the scaling or another wide shot or something. But, like, it just feels insanely, insurmountably huge the way that the waves just explode up into the air.
It feels... Really cool. It feels 4DX. There's so many things to talk about in that scene, obviously. Like, that's the scene that everyone always references with this movie, is like, oh, it took them years just to animate this, like, basically 3-minute long clip of all of this happening. Like, you could dissect it piece by piece. So it starts with like, okay, they're finally out of Egypt. They get to the sea and they're all kind of resting. They see Ramses behind them. He's mad and he's returned with his whole horde to slaughter them. They're trapped between him and the sea. Suddenly there's a column of fire that like seems to shoot out of the ocean and then also kind of arcs over them and lands in between them and the Egyptians.
Dope.
Already insane. You're like, what on earth is happening? Cause it's like crazy, like God shit. And then I like how the music swells at the same rate of the animation here.
Oh yeah.
And so you get like the same like burning bush theme from earlier in the movie exploded times 10 during this scene where he's walking out into the ocean, places his staff, and then right. Like I think like the parting of the Red Sea is kind of what people know about Moses when they think about Moses. And so, you know, something like this is coming, but I personally would never picture it like this, the way that they do it. Mm-hmm. And like the physics of it are kind of incredible, where it's like, yeah, maybe it would weirdly look like that if this happened. Like it kind of like,
it's just a wall.
The water like blows away from him almost, and it's revealing this whole like ocean floor at the same time, but you still sense like there's so much pressure on either side. And so the water has to go somewhere. And so it becomes this like mile high column. And then they start to walk through. And again, one of the scenes that I just like love so much that they just straight up did not have to do is there's like the massive wide shot of all of the Hebrews walking through this space between the waters, and you get this wide shot and it's like something out of like the Jurassic World movies, where you get like lightning going off and you see the lightning through the water. It exposes like this smaller fish, it flashes again, and it's like this massive
giant whale
behind it.
Yeah,
like what were they snorting in that animation room, where they were like, we need to give this 210% and really give the folks something to talk about with these.
It was dope as shit. I mean, like it was before, you know, we talked about this already, like sort of like the cringe factor of, you know, modern day, you know, religious practices and things like that. I mean, the stories are grand in scale. They are inexplicable. They are, you know, I mean, and that's, you know, according to the book, that is, it's, that is the nature of God is, you know, it's, it is supernatural in a way.
It just,
so it needs to feel that way. So like they had to like amp it up of just like, yeah, we can, you know, have them navigating through the trench or whatever and do that. It's like, no, we need to show the scale more. Just give them a silhouette of a fucking blue whale on the other side.
Like there, it can just show like attention to craft and like ingenuity can overcome some of that cringe Christian factor a little bit, which is why a band like Switchfoot is so powerful.
And shout out Switchfoot, shout out Under Oath, shout out all these post-hardcore Christian bands.
It's just like the movie like makes good use of like incredible film techniques first and foremost before you even get to like the subject matter itself, which I think is really cool. And so we know this, going through this, we're talking about how like this movie succeeds on like a visual level. It does a lot of cool stuff with like mixtures of 2D and 3D animation without looking like glaring, like these things shouldn't go together. And then I also, the way it stands out to me is just succeeding on like a musical level as well. This is kind of a secret musical. Did you know that going into it?
I did not know that. And I will say the music for me was the weaker part to me.
I'm going to kill you on air right now. So how about that?
From 500 miles away, you're going to kill me. It felt... The music to me felt Broadway-esque. It felt like...
They do have a Broadway show for The Prince of Egypt, so that makes sense.
Amazing. So it feels like that there was some sort of disconnect, I think, to me. Again, this is me. This is my opinion. I'm entitled to it.
You and no one else. Go on.
This is only mine. Where I think it misses for me in some parts is the... I wrote it down. The... I lip syncing of some of the songs.
Explain that.
During Moses's I Want song, he's like emoting with his face and his eyes, but his mouth, like you can tell his mouth wants to say the words. He's kind of pantomiming some of the things, and it's kind of disorienting. I don't enjoy it.
It's animated. What are you talking about lip syncing?
He's not saying the words. He's,
oh.
His character literally isn't saying the words that like the voice is singing, you know? And it,
okay.
That's where it disconnects for me.
Okay. So you're talking about where he's running. He's just like found out the truth about his life. He's doing his like...
His I Want song.
His sad run. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. One of the weaker ones. I'm not going to give you an inch here, but one of the weaker ones.
I'm not saying that song in particular, but it's like they do it a couple other times. Where there's a big song number and they're following a character and it's supposed to be from the character's point of view, or it's the character's whoever is singing.
They definitely do it.
They don't sing the words.
Plagues song, which is probably my favorite of these, mainly because let's take a little redemptive corner here. Come for a walk with me. And we'll see if we can win the audience back here. I love whoever sat down and was like, okay, listen, we got this kind of duet going here between Ramses and Moses. We really gotta show a bunch of history between these brothers while also showing the conflict that is now in front of them. Val's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of press going on for Batman Forever. We heard Batman Forever is going to be big. That'll probably help with the press of this movie. Yeah. I have heard that Rafe knows how to sing a little bit. Why don't we invite him into
down to the studio,
the booth, and lay down a couple tracks. Why don't we all just sit back, let him take it for a walk. Who cares?
Dude, we're just printing money now.
We're on digital right now. We're not recording records.
Yeah.
I can delete it if it sucks. The boldness of this movie to give a vocal double to Val Kilmer and not Ralph Fiennes is something that I love, because Ralph Fiennes sounds like just good enough to where it's like, oh, there's some humanity here.
Yeah, I did enjoy that part.
Yeah.
Because he's going for it. Mm-hmm. He's trying his hardest, you can tell.
Ralph Fiennes singing is exactly how you think it's going to sound, and also nothing how you think it's going to sound.
Right, yeah. Time. Yeah. Voldemort singing is crazy. That was another one too, because like there's one where they're kind of like standing on opposite sides of the building. Ramses is covered in welts and kind of shit. He's going through it, and Moses is on the other side, kind of just like, I told you, like, this was going to happen. But like they're singing to each other, but they're stoic. Their faces are stoic, but their faces are mad.
There's like, keep going.
Like, I wish that their mouths were moving. That's the only thing I wish.
Okay.
Like other performances. So like when they're leaving the Capitol or whatever, and Sandra Bullock starts singing, and Zipporah starts to join in. Like they're actually singing.
Uh huh.
Right. And so like I wish
singing their little Oscar nominated song.
Incredible. Oscar winning. Nominated and won.
Yeah.
I just wish, you know, we got to see Moses and Ramses like actually sing it. But that's me.
So I'm gathering that you prefer then, like, if we want to put a name to it, like diegetic songs as opposed to non-diegetic. You don't really like a song in narration.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If it's from the character's point of view, and if it's the character's voice.
Okay.
Like, imagine Let It Go.
Mm-hmm.
All of the shot for shot, the whole thing going, but she's not moving her mouth.
Uh-huh.
Weird.
Yeah. Weird for you, yeah.
Weird for me.
total freak opinion to have, but it is your total freak opinion. No, I understand where you're coming from, and it's probably going to bother me next time I watch this movie.
You're welcome.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome. However, let's bring it back to one thing to redeem it.
Yeah.
The hieroglyphics dream fever.
I was going to say, this is where I was going to bridge to next.
So cool.
Yeah.
Like really creative.
It touches on, like, you wonder what went into, like, the production of this movie and, like, how they kind of split up work. I have no idea how they, like, produce an animated movie, but I'm sure it's, like, a project management nightmare. And you're like, okay, we have these 600 animators. Who are we going to tell to do what? And how are they going to keep consistent? And when did we decide Moses' hair was going to be green that's going to fuck up all these other scenes?
Oh,
and
no.
Stuff like that. So, like, I guess you have to split it out that way. And it's evident in this movie where there's, like, areas where they tried some new stuff. Like, they have scenes that incorporate 3D elements and 2D. They have something like the Plagues song where, like, you have the characters kind of facing off against each other, and then their faces kind of do like a weird thing where like they turn and kind of combine into each other. Like, that's weird. Yeah. That's not really found anywhere else in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you have this mosaic dream sequence with the hieroglyphics, which is very cool.
Very out of left field. a unique way to use the medium and to use the pieces that people are most familiar with when it comes to ancient Egypt. And then you get it juxtaposed with shots that look like fucking Dune, you know? That's another thing. Maybe it's the color grading, color scale, it's sand, but it looks like Denis Villeneuve's Dune. And it's incredible.
You know, like I think it might be like a National Geographic commercial or some sort of like learning center commercial where it's like the white rooms with all of like the animals walking through them and you're following like the parrot through it and stuff.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's very much like that where you're kind of like, you're clearly going through this three-dimensional space that they created for the Egyptian temples. And like there's two-dimensional painting and movement happening on the walls as the camera is just kind of going crazy.
Yeah.
And it's basically in the story, it's like Moses's way of figuring out where he came from and like seeing what we saw in full 2D animation in the first like 10 minutes of the film. And yeah. like it's, and so it's able to kind of truncate that because we've already seen it, but it's really cool how like they are able to translate it and do more things within this like hieroglyphics format. Like the way the, where it shows like the, his mother and brother and sister escaping the guards, they kind of like jump across the ceiling at one point as opposed to like just hiding from them.
Or they're like, they go around a column.
Oh my God. Hiding. The column's so cool.
It's very cool use of the environment and yeah, neat piece of storytelling too.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of like show him his realization of like, this is actually who I am, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But it's also like, nightmare that like they had a mural of like, we killed
just
so many babies,
a bunch of babies and crocodiles and like size representing power as opposed to like actual physical size. So you have like the massive pharaoh and like his little guards all around him.
Mm-hmm.
That he gets to command.
One quick thing. I loved the symbolism of after Moses comes back and he's talking to Ramses, but they end up in front of the mural again and Ramses' son is there.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Dad, what the heck? What's he doing here? Kind of a thing. And then there's like another wide shot and Ramses Jr.'s in the middle and he's like RJ is at the bottom of like, there's like the cascading thing of babies.
Mm-hmm.
In the pool of, you know, two alligators and he's standing in the middle. Like,
it's so crazy.
It's so cool. So
like,
cool.
Maybe I'm just like a sucker and all the animators are like, psh, you fell for a simple
fucking noob.
Rule of threes shot. But I'm like, yeah, all of this works for me. All the ways that they're able to like juxtapose things within a given shot. Like if you were to freeze frame anything in here, just kind of study a lot of this, it's like so much is told without words. That doesn't have to be like the way that people are just like sitting in all of these confrontation scenes, the way they're structured within the shot, who is between who, who's standing between who, who's standing like above or below who to kind of represent hierarchy and stuff.
Smart.
Oh my God. We haven't even talked about Jeff Goldblum. He's in this movie.
Surprising. Surprise cameo. It's Jeff.
It's Jeff.
Just Jeff in it, and then Sandy B.
Sandy B.
This is our third. Is this our third Sandy B appearance?
We've done Speed. We've done
Miss Congeniality.
We've done Miss Congeniality. Oh my God, a little Sandy B trilogy.
Love a Sandy B trilogy.
Have we done Jeff Goldblum before? We haven't been able to have like a little Goldblum moment.
And I don't think we have. Who is Sir Patrick Stewart?
Oh, he's the older pharaoh.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Helen Mirren is the mom.
Ma'am.
The ma'am.
They should have, which I get what they were kind of trying to do, but man, I wish God's voice was Sir Patrick Stewart.
Okay. I did read up on that in like the very small amount of reading up I did for this episode. So they, the animators had the creators of the movie had kind of an issue where it's like, okay, it's 1998. How the fuck are we going to like represent God's voice in this child animated movie that's not going to like offend anyone or be like over the top, under the top? We're thinking about like biblical epics of the past. And they landed on Val Kilmer doing the voice because it would kind of be the closest to what they could think of as like Moses is hearing the voice that he hears in his head anyway, but like magnified times a million.
Sure.
And so
it would have to be his own voice kind of reflected back at him in that way.
It seems like that's the explanation they gave the execs after the contract to get
Patrick James left Earl, the building.
James Earl Jones was not available to do the voice, and no one had yet brought up, you know, of just like everyone would want Morgan Freeman to just be the voice of God. Now everyone in the boardroom be like, Morgan Freeman?
You, yeah. Listen, you bring up an interesting point with Patty Stew, because like, you know how like if they do a, like a stage production of Peter Pan, and like traditionally the guy who plays Captain Hook also plays the kid's dad?
Yeah.
Just because of like, read that how you will. Mm. It'd be interesting if like the tradition with Prince of Egypt and stage production is like his dad also plays God, because he recognizes that as like authority from both directions. So that I could see as an argument for getting Patrick Stewart in there, because you get like this power of the Pharaoh versus power of the Hebrew God and all that stuff.
I mean, like, and God should be speaking, you know, the Queen's English. You know, he
you just want an English person.
Yeah, so, and also, well, Sir Patrick Stewart, I don't think is he Scottish? No. Yes. Maybe? I don't know. Oh, he God. Rolls his R's.
He rolls his R's? Yeah. Like a Spanish person?
Kinda.
What?
I don't know. But Sir Patty Stew would have been dope. But I can kind of see what they were doing. Mm-hmm. To me, it was like, oh, okay, they're going with Val Kilmer's voice, whatever, because like that's what he would want to hear, or maybe that's kind of like how it's interpreted or whatever. Or the skeptic side of being like, oh, this only makes Moses seem like a crazy person.
That is a read here.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I heard the voice of God. What did he sound like? Well, he kind of sounded like, well, my voice.
He sounded like what okay. It would sound like if you were shouting to yourself in a cave and it echoed back to you.
Right. Yeah. He's going to be like, have you guys seen Batman Forever?
Batman Forever out July 17th.
Yeah.
This sounds Butch.
Exactly like Bruce Wayne. Which, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy Val Kilmer's voice.
R.I.P. Val. We haven't mentioned that. God damn.
The timbre of his voice and the way he delivers, like softness. I think
there's something kind of buttery there. Yeah,
it's very buttery. I quite enjoy it. Let's see a couple of other things we talked about. Okay, this will be the last thing we should probably talk about is.
I got a couple things, but
the mechanics of time.
Oh, that's what I was going to talk about next. Yes,
great. The passage of time being just like facial hair.
Yeah.
That's how you know he's been in the desert for, I don't know, a couple weeks, a couple days, years.
I want to like poll the audience on like how long they think this movie is in total, and like what, when they think time passes, because I'm going to be honest, I think this movie covers like
decades,
15 to 20 years,
yeah,
kind of secretly. So you have, I mean, not counting like his baby moments, but like, let's say he's like 18 to 20 at the when he's like at the beginning of this as a young adult. There's maybe like a few years that pass just in those beginning scenes where like him and Ramses are getting in trouble. Ramses is given more responsibility. Moses is given more responsibility. He learns more about himself. Like if we go back to the Bible, I'm sure it'll be more specific here, but like just in terms of like the visual language of this film, a lot of it is told through hair, which is really interesting. Like Ramsey's hair in particular, he starts out with his little like
side pony,
his Zuko little side ponytail. And then he gets rid of that when he's Pharaoh. Looks a lot better. I'm not a fan of the side pony.
I was so surprised. This was towards the beginning. The only visual that I remember having of Moses from this movie is when he's younger and like they're first there. In the city, and he has that headdress garb on. I thought that was his hair.
Right.
So when he takes it off and he has that little Prince Caesar cut.
When you like, take it off, you're like, hair. Of course that's not his hair. Whose hair looks like that?
Yeah, but it was crazy.
such an interesting thing about the passage of time in this movie is like that you don't really see in animated movies much. Just like their bodies change too. Like over the passage of time, they get like bigger in certain ways, or like they get like skinnier in certain ways. Like Moses definitely gets skinnier. Ramses gets kind of like buffer, kind of weirdly. Once he becomes Pharaoh and stuff, and then there's obviously montage moments like the look through heaven's eye, Danny Glover's big song, which I don't think he's singing, but like Danny Glover's character, which is a fun one because that covers like a few years at least, because he goes from like Sephora hating him to being married to Sephora to them just like having a little sexy time in their little bedroom. Oh my god.
Yeah, I know, right?
And then I also like essentially the second half of this movie just throws away any concept of time. Once he comes back to Europe from being
Egypt.
What was happening in Europe during this time? Once he comes back to Egypt after being kind of in exile, and he's just kind of hanging with the Hebrews, and Ramses just like lets him hang around. Like, where's he staying? He has like all time access to the palace whenever he wants. He just kind of walks in. It's very weird. That period of the movie, which is like 65% to 85% of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like I have no idea how long it is. And again, yeah, we could like look this up, but it could be like a week or it could be 8 years.
It could be. It could be many, many years. But I mean, depending on like how it's portrayed, as soon as he comes back out of exile, there's R2-D2, RJ, mm-hmm, little RJ's there.
Little RJ.
And he's
right. So like it's at least been like 10 years that he's been gone, right? Because that kid's like that. 8 to 10, right?
It's 8 to 10. But he doesn't age. He doesn't age while while Moses is there and giving his very unveiled threats of like, yeah, hey man, so like God said you gotta let us go or he's gonna like kill everybody. So
you get the fun Steve Martin and Martin Short song, which we have to mention. It's just like a fun little animation moment, all the stuff that they do, like going through like the Egyptian gods and the snakes eating each other and stuff. That's fun.
Pretty dope. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I like how many swings this movie takes.
Big swings.
Good or bad, you know? I'll accept your thoughts on the music and I'll get to them in 2028. And I'll get back to you.
But you reject my prayers.
I encourage you to listen to the full soundtrack, just like separate from the animation too. Because it is quite a bop. Fuck. What else did I have? Let's talk about the plagues for like a second and then we'll get into kind of end game stuff. So
I forgot about the plagues. I was like, oh yeah, doesn't he like threaten with the plague? And then that's one too many frogs.
Anytime there's like a movie that does like horror on a biblical scale, it's always about like the plagues and like locusts and stuff, swarm of locusts. This was like the original of that. This like story of Exodus. That's where all of this comes from. So you see it in like The Mummy, you see it in like other horror movies in like the 2000s and stuff. I like, there's actually 10 of them, and I like how this movie like does kind of a montage during the song where it's like you start with like the visual of the frogs coming out of the river, and then it's like all hell kind of breaks loose over the course of this song. There's a mixture of like sickness, pestilence, animals dying, so many like locusts and bugs and stuff. If you listen to the song, they're kind of like, there's a chant going on in the background that's kind of going through it, going through the different plagues and stuff. Mm-hmm. All of it obviously building up to the death of the firstborn by the angel of death. And that's the point where I'm like, if you're making this movie that is being marketed to kids and families, how the fuck
do you explain
do
this?
You do this like and so it's interesting how they do it, where it's like it's very, very, very low key, almost to the point of being like monochromatic. There's practically no music. It's like it's a eerie, silent sequence. It takes place at night because like the ninth plague or whatever was to like put the whole land into darkness or whatever. And so you have a little bit of narration from Moses at the beginning to kind of cover the blood of the lamb bits and stuff and like protecting the Hebrews. And then it's like this 2 to 3 minute sequence of like a portal opens up to heaven. It looks kind of like Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it's just, it's so silent, which is the craziest part. And it's like the way that light works in the scene, it's practically like straight up black versus white colors. Mm-hmm. And you get moments where it passes over. And then you also get moments where like, we're straight up going to kill this kid that you just saw walking on the screen.
I really enjoyed that because it was very creepy, very horror vibes, kind of poltergeisty,
mm-hmm.
that kind of a thing. Cause it's like that white tendrily kind of feels otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
Very creepy, but I was like, oh shit, how are they gonna do this? And at first it was like, oh, it kind of like just goes into a house and then leaves, and you just hear just like the
like
the breath leaving. But then there's another shot where it follows a kid walking inside, and then like his
hand, just taking out the trash,
his hand flops out, and it's just like, oh fuck.
If you watch it again, you can actually see like the last place it visits, once it does like the big huge wide shot, it shows it going into the Pharaoh's big palace, right? Which is obviously like it's about to kill Ramses' son. R2. And so R2. And if you watch it, it shows like this massive wide shot of the city after it's done, and like the spirit, the white stuff is going back up into the sky, and you see this one kind of like glowing ball come out of the Pharaoh's palace, which is like literal like R2's soul, like going up wherever. So like it shows them like killing that kid in a way.
Crazy.
Which is wild. And then
We had the captions on, and like during that whole scene while that's happening, it just says like wailing and crying in the mm-hmm. background, and it's just mm-hmm. that's horrifying.
Insane. Yeah. And then we get into the When You Believe song. They get to the ocean, they part the waves. We talked about all this in our roundabout way. What a great fucking movie, Justin. I don't listen to any of your opinions on anything
ever.
All right, you got any last thoughts before I give you the stupid game that I came up with?
Give it to me. This movie, visually, the cinematography, the lighting, the blocking, the staging, everything is a masterclass. Mm-hmm. And some of the other stuff is wacky and mm-hmm. experimental, like the hieroglyphic dream sequence mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. This is just a fun fairy tale romp. This was fun. Like I said at the beginning, I went into it apprehensive, a little uncomfortable.
Reasonably so.
But towards the end, I was like, that was a tight story. You know, it's an hour and 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Visually spectacular.
Yeah. My last note that I haven't covered is like, I liked that there's some Egyptian guards that come with them and are like in the crowd with them at the end. Like there's clearly some who like came to the other side of the slaves right at the end there. That's fun. If I could, I would have like paired this movie with another like equally quote-unquote Joe Catholic upbringing movie from the 90s, which is Hunchback of Notre Dame, I also think you haven't seen, right?
I haven't.
I would definitely check it out because it's doing a lot of similar things, but it's kind of an interesting foil to this because it's doing them from the Disney perspective. And so you don't get a lot of, you don't get as much of like the darkness or the snarkiness, but it's definitely still there. It's a very interesting movie. It's a very beautiful movie. It's got the music, it's got the laughs, it's got the songs, but it's also like, again, like boldly religious in weird ways that don't necessarily have that cringe factor to them.
Interesting. I would love to just juxtapose that movie against this one.
Do a little double feature on that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Before I get into this game, have you been drinking anything? I had a little red drink to represent, you know, blood purposes, but
I've been a little bit ill over the past week, so no alcohol for me. But if I was, I was going to do something called the Holy Moses. Just like your standard kind of bourbon, red, very red, of course, for the blood. I found a couple other things I was going to experiment with, called like and do something with rosé, and something like that, and call it a mosé.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. What do you got? What do you got?
Oh, it's a Negroni. I think people get that, like, we went in a blood direction. Like, yeah, that's all people need to take away from this, obviously. Yeah. Very bloody movie. Mm-hmm. Let's get into the game. Justin, it is time to play Can You Escape the Plagues?
Oh, no. I don't know.
Let me set you up. You are a delightful and handsome time traveler with an eye patch. And through a series of unforeseen circumstances, you found yourself trapped in ancient Egypt right when Moses is called upon the Hebrew God to enact vengeance against the Pharaoh through a series of 10 plagues. Womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
But with your knowledge of history and a little bit of luck, you think you can get through these plagues just fine. Yeah. Shall we give it a try?
I'll make it. I'll figure it out.
All right. We're going to go through 10 rounds. I'm going to ask you a little trivia question. You're going to give me your best answer. All right.
Got it. Yeah.
All right. Plague number one is happening all around you. The Nile has become a river of blood. Are you picturing it?
I'm picturing it. It's red as shit.
All right. Here's my question. What should you do if you get someone else's blood on you? Your options are rub it around to evaporate it, or wash the area with soap and water.
Wash the area with soap and water. Gross. Get your blood off me.
You're doing amazing. One down. Okay. Plague two. Frogs emerge from the river and get everywhere.
Gross.
What substance can act as a natural frog repellent? Is it tea leaves or coffee grounds?
I'm going to say it is coffee grounds.
Correct, Justin. Two for two. Your instinct was right on that one. All right. Plague number three. Gnats emerge from the ground and get everywhere as well.
In the crack.
They kind of ran out of ideas pretty quickly on these. Which of these substances is not a main component of citronella? Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Trimethylxanthine, methyl isoeugenol, or limonene?
It's the methylamine. The second one.
The second one?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. That is incorrect. The correct answer was trimethylxanthine, of course.
Of course.
That, I believe, is science for caffeine. Yeah.
Don't want that in candle.
Plague number four. It's okay. Gnats.
Gnats, I can deal with.
Throw some DEET on that. Yeah. Plague number four. Wild animals and flies attack the city. What should you do if you encounter a coyote in the wild? Should you, number one, shoot that thing? Number two, run and throw objects to either side of you if you have them? Or number three, stay still and try to make yourself as big as possible?
That's what you want to do with a bear. I don't think you want to... No, fuck it. You want to shoot that thing. You want to shoot that coyote.
That may work, but the official advice is stay still and try to make yourself as big as possible.
Okay.
Although shooting that thing would probably work. I probably shouldn't have thrown that in as a joke answer. All right.
I'll give myself the answer.
You'll give yourself that one. That'll probably work. Plague five. Pestilence kills off most livestock. What common pantry item can contain certain antimicrobial properties in a pinch? You ready?
Yep.
Honey, peanut butter, or Nutella?
It's honey is my antimicrobial, for sure.
Yes, yes. And I think they had that in Egypt at the time. So you're in luck, big boy.
Well, they were going to the land of only milk and honey.
Yeah. That probably got old real quick.
Toothache city. Yeah. That's where dentistry came from.
You're doing great. And everyone around you is like, who's this guy? Plague six. Everyone gets infected with boils. Shit's starting to get kind of real now. All right. Where does the Google AI overview recommend making an incision when lancing a boil to drain pus? Is it the top, the center, or honey, you'll know it when you see it?
It's the center.
It's the center.
The top.
Whatever you classify as the top.
The top. It ain't Joe. I'll tell you, it ain't the top.
Plague 7. It starts hailing really bad. Should you or should you not hide under an overpass during a hailstorm?
Yes, you should, because you can definitely get super injured in a hailstorm.
Advice is you should not, because it's the same deal with a tornado. Weird shit can happen with wind and water during under an overpass, and you can get kind of swept out. Watch
right.
Twisters.
Oh, the second. Okay, I haven't seen that one.
Okay, you're doing all right. You're okay. Kind of, you got hit by some balls of ice.
That's fine.
Plague number 8, locusts. Mm. Just locusts. Which Jurassic Park movie contains a major plot line about giant locusts attacking crops? Is it Dominion, Fallen Kingdom, Rebirth, or Jurassic World Velocicoaster at Universal Studios Orlando?
I think it's Dominion. I didn't see that one.
It is Dominion. You're correct. You're lucky. Yeah. You don't giant need to bugs. See that one. It sucked.
Yeah. Good.
You're doing great. Plague number 9. Total darkness across the land for 3 days. Uh-oh.
Oh, no. I only have one eye because I have an eye patch.
Ah, see? Ah. You got it back. Which of the following organisms could you not use to produce bioluminescent light? Okay. Is it anglerfish, Pinellas stipticus fungus, wood sprites, or Quantula striata land snail eggs?
Anglerfish.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, you can't use that. They're deep sea, abyss level sea creatures.
Anglerfish is incorrect. Anglerfish is the thing that has the...
The bulb, but like I couldn't use that for light.
I'm not going to argue with this on this one. The correct answer was wood sprites, because that's a fake animal from Avatar. Those little seed things that fly that's around them in Avatar.
Those aren't real.
No. All right. Plague number 10. You know him, you love him. The angel of death. Mm. What animal's blood should you splatter on your doorpost to signal to the angel of death that you should be passed over?
That we're cool.
Is it cow, goat, wood sprite, or lamb?
Wood sprite blood. It would glow so great. I believe Val Kilmer specifically called for lamb's blood.
Yes. Yes. Fantastic. Congratulations. You have survived most of the 10 plagues of Egypt.
Yeah.
But wait, what's that?
There's more.
A new health bar has appeared, and it's massive. All of the plagues have formed together into some sort of plague Voltron and are headed your way. A giant monster angel with frog legs and gnat wings that smells terrible and is spraying blood and hail from its eyes. It charges at you. Oh, the humanity. You take out your gun that you've had this whole time, ready to go down in a storm of holy bullets, when suddenly a tall figure steps in front of you and shields you with a burst of light. It's Moses. He calms the plague monster and then tells you that you need to leave this place and return to your own time, because his people have a song to sing and an Oscar to win. He uses his staff to conjure up a glowing time portal for you to jump through, but due to your less than ideal coordination, you trip on your way through. Embarrassed, you mumble something about an old calf wound in your leg and stumble through the portal, returning you to the year 3099. As the portal closes behind you, Miriam mishears you and mistakenly believes you said something about gold calf good. Surely nothing bad will come of that. Justin, thank you for playing. Can you escape the plagues?
Amazing. It came all the way back around. This is Miriam's fault? I love it. Classic. Blame the older sister.
Oh my god.
Hilarious.
Justin, any final thoughts on the movie, or did we cover everything on your end?
I think we about got it. You know, as far as biblical movies go, this one's all right in my book.
I'm glad we covered it. Hey, yeah. Hey, you all right
with me. So, Joe, the next episode we're going to do is our ultimate episode.
It is our final swan song. We originally had this split up, but then we decided, to make it even, go out with a bang. We're going to do our very first combined movie episode, where we're going to watch a movie of Justin's and a movie of mine, and we're going to talk about it. And there may be things we can talk about between them both, or we may just talk about them separately, and that'll be fine.
Oh my God, they're going to be insane. We are going to be watching Pee-wee's Big Adventure and
A League of Their Own.
Holy shit, two movies you'd never think you would see back to back.
A natural double feature that we are ending on.
It's an 80s pairing that you would see only at a drive-in theater.
Yeah. A League of Their Own is the 90s, so we're already off on a weird foot.
Yeah, we're seeing movies from the future. crazy stuff. But I'm excited for it. It's going to be weird. It's going to be wild. Someone's going to end up topless. We're going to get the cops called on us. Something's going to be crazy.
We're going to go full Monty.
This episode. We're going to watch the full Monty.
Yep.
And then, but that's how we're going to do our last episode, as we bring Uncultured Universe to a close. So join us next time for when we'll watch two movies at the same time. And we'll catch you later. See you on all the socials, or not, or on LinkedIn. Bye.